The drama P-Valley is set in a black strip club in the Mississippi Delta. The dancers are acrobatic, artistic, and independent. The show is about their labor, but also about a wide variety of stories about power, money, and a community's identity. The show is really good, and it's really different from anything else on TV right now. I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're talking about P-Valley on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Joining us today from her home in Brooklyn is Soraya Nadia McDonald, culture critic for The Undefeated. Welcome back, Soraya.
Thank you. Happy to be here once again.
And also with us from her home in Oakland, up early, is writer Taylor Crumpton. Hi, Taylor.
Hi. Thank y'all for having me back.
Thank you for rising with the sun, as they say. So to give you a sense of this show, if you haven't had a chance to watch it, P-Valley is from Katori Hall, who's a playwright. She adapted this from her own play. It focuses a lot of its attention, I would say, on three characters: Mercedes, who's the headliner at the club, played by Brandi Evans; Autumn, who's a new girl with a mysterious past, played by Alerica Johnson; and Uncle Clifford, the owner of the club, played by Nico Annan. There are other characters too. They show up in stories about church and music and real estate and local politics and all kinds of things. There are clearly a lot of mysteries that are yet to be uncovered. Soraya, you wrote a really positive review of P-Valley over at The Undefeated. What do you think this show gets right?
Well, a lot of things. First off, I was just really happy to see this like rich, fully developed melodrama set in the Mississippi Delta. I grew up in North Carolina, and so I'm always looking for new and interesting stories about Black Southerners. And Katori Hall herself is from Memphis. And so I think one of the first things that struck me when I was watching this, one, I was like, oh my God, they actually got the dialect. But I just found that to be so refreshing. The other thing, though, that I really appreciated about this series is it takes a group of people seriously who very often aren't taken seriously, and that's strippers and sex workers at large. And so sort of rather than kind of collapsing them into common tropes where, you know, what you often see in film and television is either, if there are strippers in a show, they are sort of used as background, almost as wallpaper, the way the dancers at the Bada Bing were used in The Sopranos. Or, you know, they are strippers with a heart of gold, right? There has to be this sort of element about them where they're feeling some amount of shame about the work that they're doing, and they're trying really hard to get away from it. You know, like, oh, she does this one thing, but she's actually a good person, right? Or, you know, this other idea that comes up really often, which is tying the notion of what it means to be a good father with keeping your daughter off the pole, right? That's a joke from like Chris Rock's special Never Scared that has just sort of built upon itself. P-Valley basically just sort of like does away with all of that and is like, we're going to have a story. It's set in a strip club in the Mississippi Delta. These characters are all really layered and interesting. They're not necessarily like angels or demons. And we're going to talk about, like, you know, all the subjects that you just mentioned, from religion to gentrification and land development to race and racism. And on top of that, like, you've just got this wonderfully interesting character in Uncle Clifford, who runs this club called The Pink, and who just has like fabulous outfit after fabulous outfit, and who has also created a space for herself, because Uncle Clifford is non-binary, to live in a place that we typically think of as being inhospitable to queer people. And so all of that just adds up to, I think, a really interesting and also fun show.
Yeah, there were times at the very beginning when I wondered if there was maybe like one too many plots, just because I was having trouble keeping up with, you know, all the characters within the club. And then there's, I have like a weakness where my eyes glaze over every time a movie or a TV show starts talking about real estate. My brain just like goes numb. But later, you know, I think as these episodes develop, you do see how the real estate story kind of knits together with the other stories. And I think eventually, you know, the church story and the club story sort of are able to kind of mesh. Taylor, what do you think of this show?
I think for me, I definitely appreciated an emphasis on the Mississippi Delta. In so many conversations and media depictions of the South, we primarily focus on Atlanta because of its positionality as the Black Mecca, without realizing that there's so much complexity and nuances in other regions in the South, especially the Mississippi Delta. I mean, the state and our nation's consciousness was known as a hub of the civil rights movement. Right now, Mississippi is an archetype of how decades of social and economic policy has really hindered social mobility for Black communities, which is why the pink is seen as such an economic capital and resource of that town, because it's one of the few areas in which Black women who in the Mississippi Delta suffer from the highest rates of obesity, infant and maternal mortality, and poverty are able to provide just an economic foundation for their growth and their family's growth. And we see the community that in these regions, especially in the South, strip clubs really are the economic heart of the town.
Yeah, I very much appreciated the fact that so much of the show is about, it's very kind of tuned into the specific economic realities of these individual characters, right? You have one character, Autumn, who has kind of come to the strip club in closer to the way that maybe other television shows would introduce someone, which is they're sort of a mysterious person. They just need a job that doesn't ask too many questions. And so originally, that's kind of how you meet her. But Mercedes, I think there's such an interesting story with her about the fact that she has a very specific aspiration. And she's not, and I think this is part of what Soraya was saying that I agree with, she's not embarrassed by stripping. She just has other things she wants to eventually do, partly because she wants to have her own business and work for herself. So she has a plan, but it's not the sort of TV storyline where it's okay that she's a stripper because she's just doing it so she can become a nurse or that kind of thing, where there's a sense that it's sort of something distasteful, but acceptable if it's for, you know, if the ends justify the means. She is good at what she does. And I think one of the things that Katori Hall has talked about quite a bit is really trying to make sure people understand the artistry and the physical work that go into strip club dancing, particularly pole work. There are two, in the first, I would say, four episodes, there are two different dance sequences where you just, I mean, when people compare it to Cirque du Soleil, like it is some Cirque du Soleil business. And you really do get that feeling for how physical it is. Hustler sort of starts as a labor movie talking about some of the issues that they experience working in the club. But then it kind of veers off into this other plot about the drugging of the guys and all that stuff. And it veers away a little bit from the experience in the club. I appreciated the fact that this really stays, you know, it gets at the competition between the women, the fact that people really value their stage time and their prominence, which also opens up the discussions that they have about colorism, because, you know, Autumn is very light skinned. And from the minute she shows up, that is a big part of her interactions with the other women.
You know, that's another one of these dynamics that you see sort of playing out at the pink, right? Because you have Mercedes, who has obviously invested in her craft and she takes pride in it, right? She thinks about the stage wear that she's going to put on, you know, her wigs, how she's doing her hair, but also her ability to sort of like size up customers, particularly those who might end up wanting to get a lap dance. Like she has this amazing instincts almost for anthropology and economics when it comes to sort of figuring out who to spend time with. But going back to colorism, the other thing that she understands and expresses some anger about is the fact that, you know, when Autumn arrives, she's already sort of like sucking away attention because she's the new girl, but she's also, you know, sucking away attention because she's so light-skinned to the point that she could possibly pass, even though Autumn is not necessarily nearly as skilled dancer as Mercedes is, particularly with her pole work, she's still able to separate men from their money fairly easily. And as I was watching this, the thing that I kept coming back to was this essay that Tracy McMillan Cottom, who is a professor at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, wrote years ago when she was talking about the experiences of seeing the way men, in particular, she was talking about white men in Atlanta, like college-age white men, consume Black women's bodies at the strip club, and how much more labor Black strippers end up putting in to make less money than their white counterparts who can maybe sort of show up and take their clothes off and kind of twirl around and be pretty and not really have to do much else. And that's the dynamic that you see between Autumn and Mercedes. You know, I think that just comes back to Katori's ability to sort of observe life and translate them exceptionally well to the screen so that you get all of those nuances between these interactions with these women, because she's really spent like quite a bit of time observing this particular atmosphere. You know, it feels like she really immersed herself.
For sure. Let me throw back over to you, Taylor. What are you thinking about some of these themes that Soraya is talking about?
So when we're talking about colorism, especially in strip clubs and exemplified through Southern hip hop, right? Because we have to understand that the way in which we are digesting strip club culture is because the way in which it was popularized in the Dirty South in Southern hip hop, right? We've seen even in, you know, a latest conversation in 50 Cent and Lil Wayne, the valuing of racially ambiguous and light-skinned women that appear to be exotic or could pass in comparison to dark-skinned Black women who really much are the foundation and built the strip club to be the capitalist and indulgent culture that we see today, especially in this TV series. So when we're looking at Mercedes and Autumn, we're seeing all of these historical, cultural, and political notions about what it means to have these two Black women in relation to each other. One who is a dark-skinned woman who seems to be the OG and the leader of this economic capital and powerhouse in the town, in comparison to this very light-skinned woman who just came in, who we can tell through her dialect, right, has some type of college education. I think in the first episode, a stripper is like, oh, you have like a something Saint Laurent bag, and she corrects her with that diction, right? So we're already kind of seeing these ways in which this classism element is also inserted into the strip club by their interactions. And as Soraya was saying about dialect, you can tell that Mercedes very much encapsulates this Southern sweetheart identity in her interactions with her clientele, with the girls, her status as a celebrity in the town, while Autumn comes in kind of being seen as a Hyula Heffa, as Uncle Clifford and Mercedes says. And the ways in which Hyula Heffa is heard in the South is a cultural kind of symbol, a signifier, a whistle blow about the ways in which she's going to move and navigate in this town in relation to its Southern dynamics.
Yeah. And I also want to give a shout to an interview that Katori Hall did on Bullseye with Travell Anderson, in which they talked quite a lot about Uncle Clifford as a non-binary character embraces. And this is one of the things that she said about Uncle Clifford, is that she uses she, her pronouns, but also really embraces being called Uncle Clifford, and that it was very intentional to really have that character embrace specifically masculine ideas and specifically feminine ideas. I really recommend that conversation if you're curious about the evolution of that character, which I very much was. I think that's a terrific performance. I think everybody is really good in this show. All the episodes were directed by women. I think you can tell it's very hard to make a show in a strip club that avoids seeming like it's ogling strippers, but it does not come off that way. It does treat them like dancers and workers. We obviously, as you can tell, really like this show and think it's well done. And we want to know what you think about P-Valley. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. Be sure to read Soraya's piece at The Undefeated. When we come back, it will be time to talk about what's making us happy this week. So come right back.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Tor Books. Read The Living Dead by George A. Romero and Daniel Krauss, on sale now wherever books are sold. When George Romero passed away in 2017, New York Times bestselling author Daniel Krauss finished Romero's final zombie tale. Set in the present day, The Living Dead is an entirely new tale, the story of the zombie plague as George A. Romero wanted to tell it.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment, What is Making Us Happy This Week? Soraya McDonald, what is making you happy this week?
So what's making me happy is the sort of continuation of the energy that has come up with the sort of racial reckoning that is taking place in the country at large. You know, I think we were certainly, as a person who has observed the sort of waxing and waning of talking about racial justice and social justice in this country in the wake of, you know, the killings of Michael Brown, of Eric Garner, of Trayvon Martin, that I was a little skeptical when I started seeing all of these people, you know, in the streets marching and talking about whiteness. You know, this is probably also going to sort of fade out, you know, within a few weeks. And instead, what we've seen is like actual changes begin to happen from book publishing, where, you know, you've got Lisa Lucas now going to Random House, which is like amazing. You've seen, you know, like 300 some odd people sign on to a list of like very clearly enumerated and very specific demands for American theater with the We See You White American Theater movement, basically sort of demanding changes in everything from the way theater is covered. We're seeing them demanding sort of structural changes within casting, within the unions. And so like this is really sort of like nitty gritty stuff, but it's also getting at systemic problems and offering solutions to those. And so I am just like really heartened by that. And I'm looking forward to seeing the ways that we continue to wrestle with these differences in power dynamics through the rest of the year and far, far off into the future. I think there's really something to be hopeful about there.
Absolutely. Amen, Soraya McDonald. Thank you very much. Taylor Crumpton, what is making you happy this week?
So Flo Milli is a rapper from Mobile, Alabama. She is 20 years old and just released her debut mixtape, Ho Why's You Here? And in this sweet, beautiful intersection right now of women hip hop and Southern hip hop, when we're talking about it in this national sense, she really is like the latest iteration of these women rappers in the South who have utilized social media in order to garner an organic fan base and then capitalize on that in the national space, right? We've seen this in Cardi B from her ascension as an Instagram personality with roots in the strip club to loving hip hop to now being a Grammy award winning rapper. The same thing with City Girls, of course, Meg Thee Stallion. And now we have Flo Milli, who is just exemplifying all of these kind of notions that are going on in P-Valley, right? The adoration and the gaze of the Black female body, the empowerment in being so young and Southern and Black through her raps, right? And she just kind of disapproves these cultural notions that Southern rappers can't be lyricists, that women rappers are not cannot compete at the same standard as her male peers. And at the age of 20 is right now giving us a more nuanced, complex project that some male rappers in their prime have yet to give us. So there's just something joyful about seeing a young Black woman from the South not diminish herself, not remove her accent, right? And be so authentic. And that is what's drawing people in from across the whole entire nation. So I'm just really happy to see a young Black girl from the South be herself and win and excel at that and be so celebrated on social media and in public spaces. So stream Flo Milli.
Flo Milli. Thank you very much, Taylor Crumpton. So what is making me happy this week is a documentary on HBO called Showbiz Kids. And it's a kind of a weird sounding title. It sounds kind of cheesy, but it is about child actors. And I think it's the smartest thing I've seen on child actors because it was made by Alex Winter, who is the Bill in Bill and Ted but who also was a child actor, particularly in theater, and has been an actor ever since. And he has this very smart and empathetic way of talking to a whole bunch of people who were child actors, right? Some like Henry Thomas, who was in E.T., Will Wheaton, Jada Pinkett Smith, who talks both about being a very young actor, but also talks about her own kids and how she kind of guides the careers of her own kids. Todd Bridges, who talks about how the kids from Different Strokes were sort of perceived as the problematic child actor. He talks about kind of where he fits into that. I really thought it was very smart and very good. There are no other talking heads in it besides the actors, which I think is really smart. There are no psychologists or journalists or anything like that. It is giving these people an opportunity to tell their own stories. It gave me a lot to chew on as a viewer of media and as a journalist. And I just think it's super interesting. And it's available again on HBO on demand. It's called Showbiz Kids, directed and written by Alex Winter. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Soraya at Soraya McDonald and Taylor at Taylor Crumpton. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks so much to both of you for being here. Thank you, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, of course, for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, subscribe to our newsletter. It is over at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here next week.
The Americans with Disabilities Act was signed 30 years ago.
So why, to this day, is the disability community still fighting for their rights?
Listen now to learn what they're fighting for.
On Throughline from NPR, every Thursday.